The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
News Talk 106.3 KMED. You're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
So a couple of emails of the day. Got some good ones. Got a whole bunch. We'll have to do multiple readings of them, I think, this week. But emails of the day. Sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson, Central Point Family Dentistry. CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com. It's on Freeman Way, right next to the Mazatlan Mexican Restaurant. Hey, if you need some special mouthwashes or toothbrushes or toothpaste and things to help with your dental health, Central Point Family Dentistry will actually sell it to you at their cost. They have a kiosk there. You don't even have to be a patient there, but I think you'll want to be a patient there. They just want you to have a healthy mouth. Okay, CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com. I'm going to give Lynn Barton an email of the day. Bill, good discussion with Matt about Christians not voting the other day. I've had the same experience with Christians. I know saying that they don't plan to vote. They don't like either Harris nor Trump and almost feel it would be a sin to vote for either. This is where their reasoning is unbiblical. The Bible is very clear that to him who knows the good he can do and doesn't do it, to him that is sin. We need to urge our brothers and sisters to vote policy, not personality. Ask themselves which candidate will be most likely to help the country and which will be most likely to harm the country. Most Christians avoid politics because it's confusing and corrupt, and they often are truly low-information voters. But they can tell the basics of who is closer to their values and who most opposes their values. There are also many Christian groups that put out recommendations. There's no excuse not to vote because they don't know who to vote for. We also need to encourage them that voting is a duty as a Christian. God expects us to vote using the choices available to us. This is godly maturity. We do what we can in a very broken world. Many peoples throughout history have not had this privilege, and yet half of American Christians don't bother to carry on the nation that others died to give them. If they say God is in control, we can ask them, do you go to the store to buy food? Do you cook it? Why? Why not wait for God to give it to you like he gave the Israelites manna in the wilderness? After all, he's in control. Hopefully that will help them see the absurdity of not voting and expecting God to make things right. God expects us to obey his commands, and he will not bless people that refuse to act. He will let us live with the consequences, which are becoming very severe. Also, we need to encourage our pastors to teach the congregation of their duty to vote and to decide by assessing policies, not personalities. He can remind them that God has used very flawed people throughout history to accomplish his will. If the pastor urges the congregation to vote, they will vote. If they have no one to teach them, many of them won't. Pastors have massive influence over their people, and I pray that many will use that influence to teach them a biblical approach to voting. And we all need to pray and ask God's forgiveness for our complacency and failure, to ask him to show mercy and pour out a spirit of repentance and true faith on the nation again. I do see some signs of this happening. We pray, we act, and then we leave the results in God's hands, knowing that he is in control and we have done all we know to do. If you read this to your audience, thank you. I hope they'll act on it and assume nothing. Lynn, I appreciate that, and very thoughtful, and that is definitely an email of the day. 5 minutes after 7. Mr. Outdoors will join me here in a few minutes after news, and we're going to talk a little bit of earthquake preparedness, especially after the great shakeout, the emergency alert last week. Everybody gets together and does a little practicing. We'll talk about some serious, you know, good things to do. Ways to look at life, how you could be preparing.
This is Brent with Home and Built Deck and Fence. Many customers in the Rogue Valley.
40 tonight, some fog possible morning, mostly sunny Tuesday with a high of 66.
10 after 7, Mr. Outdoors joins me here in a couple of minutes. And let's see, Betty writes me this morning too. Bill, how do you know when new people are moving to Southern Oregon? They fence their property and put up no trespassing signs and then try to change Oregon to what they just left. That's an interesting way. I don't know. There's another way of looking at fences. Good, strong fences make for good neighbors here. Betty, I've heard it both ways. Maybe we can talk about that on the show at some point. David, you wanted to weigh in on the email of the day from Lynn, though, talking about Christians and not voting. What do you say?
Well, whether a person votes or doesn't vote, and actually the whole notion of democracy, you know, it doesn't change the Creator's timeline for what we're supposed to be living through, you know. I don't think that he has any objective reason to make our planet more comfortable for any of us during our lifetime. I think that for that person to have any amount of concern over voting, it just really misplaced anxiety, you know. Democracy is not changing the fate of history or what we're supposed to be going through at any given time.
Okay.
That's my take on it.
Yeah, no, I'm just trying to think the so you're thinking, are you one of those people who thinks that the vote doesn't matter, doesn't change?
I think there's co-evolving, there's two arcs. One is the arc of the individual through time and what you think is important to do for your character and your development as a human. And one is the timeline of history the creator is moving us through. And they're two different things. And like I said, I don't know if the person thinks that some democratic action will change whatever his plan is for us.
Well, I do know. Well, the one thing I can say, though, is that we always have our free will, do we not? Free will has effect on our lives to an extent, if we make it so.
Do you think any government or individual plan or happenstance will change whatever fate we are supposed to live through? I mean, we have a divine plan. Anyone of faith believes there is a divine plan and some type of divine timeline. So what action can we take to change that?
Okay, well, that sounds like a very self-defeating.
Your free will is important for your character development and the importance of the choices you make for the struggles you're given. You know,
but a million people's free will in harmony doesn't have any effect.
No, the creator doesn't have a democracy.
I didn't claim that the creator did, though.
Okay, so but you know, the Jews have a funny take on this. They believe in free will with also predestination. It's a very interesting concept. It's not something I'm going to explain in 2 minutes.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get that, though, but I disagree with the Jews on this. So,
well, that's okay. I mean, it's an interesting concept, but we aren't changing his plan for us. There is a plan for humanity, and we aren't changing it through democracy. So I just wish Lynn had no anxiety over that.
Well, I wasn't detecting anxiety. I was detecting actually some thoughtfulness. Detect thoughtfulness from you.
He needs to get people mobilized so that we can create some environment on Earth that's comfortable or safer or more upright or whatever. But the environment we're living in doesn't matter. It's perfect it's perfect for what we're supposed to go through as each of our development as a human being.
So in other words, Jews were predestined to die.
Everyone's predestined to die.
Well, no, but you know what I'm getting at. I'm speaking Holocaust. That was predestined. Nothing could have been done to change that.
Every event, if you look back in history and time, for as a culture or as an individual, you need to look at the past and understand why things have to happen to create certain lessons or certain environments that came after it. And that's true on an individual level or on a societal level. Everything happens the way it has to happen in a divine coordination.
All right. Well, you and I will agree to disagree on this particular aspect. But I'm only a baby theologian. In other words, I'm not. Okay.
That's okay. I'm not a theologian at all. I'm just using common sense.
All right. Appreciate the call there, David. 14 after 7. We'll hold that call right now. I don't want to take any more of those calls at the moment because we're going to talk some. Now, I know we could just decide that we are destined to die in an earthquake and that we all have to die in the earthquake in order for Mother Earth to be cleansed from the cancer of humanity. I propose that we prepare anyway, and we'll talk with Mr. Outdoors about that coming up.
The new Jackson County Circuit Court.
Here's Bill Meyer.
By the way, I'm going to talk briefly with Diana Anderson here in a few minutes after Mr. Outdoors. And I just want to let you know, she has an event going on tonight. You know, she's been putting on these amazing presentations, blowing up the Vision 24, all of the sustainable development, climate-friendly, equitable community, Bullstein, that is being foisted upon this. And our cities are kind of going along with this. She has another event coming up tonight. She'll tell us all about that in just a few. Mr. Outdoors is with me right now. It's not an outdoor report this time. It's what happens when the earthquake comes, if we ended up getting the big earthquake, and all of a sudden you find yourself outdoors in a survival situation. I guess that's where we're going to start this morning. Hey, Greg, welcome back.
Yeah, you know, of course, last Thursday we had the great shakeout where, you know, they tested systems that when the big one actually happens will not work. And then they tested their own government response to something that, you know, when you start looking at how governmental response has handled, hurricanes.
Yeah. I would dare say that
other disasters, you suddenly realize if your great faith and hope is in the government to come to your rescue, you are sadly misplacing it, because the big one, and maybe we ought to define what the big one is, but when the big one happens, help isn't going to be coming to Jackson and Josephine counties for a very long time. We are going to get completely cut off and isolated from the world, and it's going to take a really long time to be able to put significant relief supplies in here.
So it is up to us then to be responsible adults and make sure that we have reasonable preparations to be able to handle our own situation here. For I would imagine if the big one were to hit, assuming that you survive the initial impact and all of the all of the aftershocks that would be coming out of the big one. We're talking about a 9.0, right? We're talking about that,
yeah,
as the 9.0.
The big one unfolds, and let me bring people up to speed. What the big one is, it's a massive rupture on the Cascadia subduction zone a couple hundred miles off the coast. And a couple hundred miles in geologic terms, that's basically right in the neighborhood. So even though the epicenter may be a couple hundred miles off the coast, the catastrophic effects and the upheavals that will occur are definitely going to cover every part of this area. And when I say upheavals, I don't have to try and paint a picture of what may happen. All I have to do is direct you to Alaska and the Good Friday quake in 64. 30 to 40 foot of ground displacement. Huge landslides. I mean, basically sides of mountains just completely collapsed and fell away. And then the aftershocks that came, there was a series of them. The Good Friday quake was a 9.2. They had a series of aftershocks in the 7 and 8 range that went on for 3 days behind that.
Now, I just want to say as an example, if we got a 9.0 down here in Southern Oregon, isn't there a good case to be made that even what we look at as relatively secure mountains right now? Let's take Roxy Ann Peak, Prescott Park, where all of Southern Oregon's emergency communications, you know, the big big mountaintop there, are going in here. The chances are that's all glacial waste. Isn't a lot of that going to come down, you know, in that kind of an event?
It could. I mean, the whole front side of Roxy Ann that is all neighborhoods and development now is built on a landfill deposit that is still slowly going downhill, and you don't have to be any kind of a geologist or engineer to drive around up there and be able to start finding evidence of that creep on that landslide debris.
Well, hey, it keeps Terra Firma and Millette Construction in business, okay? Right?
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
You know, when they first started developing up there in the 1970s, my mom wanted us to move there. My dad, I will never forget, we drove up to a building site in Angel Crest, and my dad started taking a look at things, and he told my mom, if you move up here, you're doing it without me. This is not stable ground. This is all sliding downhill. You buy a house up here, and it's going to come to pieces because the ground is still moving. Dad was 100% right. They have that section of Hillcrest Road that they cannot keep in place for very long because gravity on that landslide debris keeps pulling it down towards where, you know, the orchard used to be below, and now there's houses down below it. Hillcrest Road has that section. And if you're familiar with it, everybody knows what I'm talking about. So, yeah, there's some of that, but what would be far more at risk for collapse and failure, the Siskiyou Summit area.
Oh, yeah.
And definitely I-5 on Sexton.
Mm-hmm.
So when I say we're going to get cut off and isolated, we will, because every single mountain pass we have, there will be no way to get out of this valley or in terms of bringing supplies in. If we see the 30 to 40 foot of displacement on the surface, like they did in Alaska, go look at pictures of Anchorage, Alaska from 1964. they were nearly 1,000 miles away from the epicenter of the quake, and they saw 30 to 40 foot of upheaval.
Have any scientists estimated what the 9.0 would be for us? Because I know a lot of the infrastructure reconstruction that's been happening down here in Southern Oregon has been designed to really withstand the big one. And I don't know, if you're going to have the land whipping around 40 to 50 feet in one direction or another.
They didn't do it to that level. So they're doing it now to a higher seismic code, basically the sevens.
Okay.
We did discuss this once before, years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I started talking about what I'm going to say next. The dams, Lost Creek and Applegate, when you're starting to get 30 and 40 foot of ground displacement, when you start having the mountains around the reservoir collapsing and coming into it, and what could happen, those dams are at high risk to fail. When I talked about this before, I heard from Army Corps of Engineers, and they go, well, no, we built our dams to significantly withstand, you know, expected earthquakes.
But probably not 9.0, right?
No, and not 30 to 40 foot of ground displacement. And when I brought that up, I finally got begrudging admission. Well, no, maybe not that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we better hope that when this happens, I'll tell you the time of year, you better hope it happens in mid-August to the beginning of October.
Yeah, low water, low issues, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
If it happens in the spring with both dams at full pool, then what happens is dams fail and you have basically what amounts to two tsunamis rushing down through the canyons headed downstream. And Grants Pass is where the two both hit. And Grants Pass just doesn't survive that kind of a hit just from the dam failures. But then that water heading downstream, here's your other nightmare scenario. The tsunamis that are going to be triggered over on the coast are going to be massive, easily Indonesia or bigger. And all of that water surging up the Rogue will meet the water coming down from the dams, and the water coming down from the dams will hit that water coming up the Rogue and then start stacking back upstream.
All right. Now, you know what you're going to get me to prepare for now? I know how we're going to take care of this now. Linda and I and the cats are going to get our own individual drones that will just lift us up in the air and keep us up while it's all happening. How about that?
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, people, when they're thinking preparedness and they're hearing 72 to 96 hours, 72 to 96 hours is not going to cut this.
Yeah, more like 72 to 96 days, probably.
No, I'm honestly, watch what's happening back east right now. Watch these areas in North Carolina and Tennessee that have been completely cut off from the outside world, starting with Helene. Take a look and watch how long it's taking to get really meaningful supplies into these areas. They still have areas back there. The roads are completely wiped out. They can't get there by ground.
Hmm. So it seems to behoove us then when it comes to preparation materials everywhere from food to water and various other things. You'd probably want them located. You want to have, you know, quite a bit of that if at all possible. But you also want to make sure that they're in areas that likely would not be subject to collapse. Would that be a fair assessment?
Correct.
Here? Yeah.
And then you definitely better start thinking about things like seeds, because you've got to be thinking long term.
Mm.
Because this is not something that, you know, okay, well, we're going to have 4 weeks of pretty suck and then everything's going to, you start coming in. No, it's going to take longer than that.
Well, I wonder if ultimately, if we ended up having that 9.0 and that kind of tremendous, where you have the land moving horizontally up to 150 feet, you know, back and forth, you know, that kind of movement, and the up and downs of 30 to 40 feet in each direction, you know, that sort of thing. If that's not almost a migratory sort of situation, or you survive it and really you just get out of the area. You find a way to leave.
There were people in Alaska who survived the Good Friday quake. That's exactly what they did.
Yeah, they did, huh? Okay.
Yeah, so they basically realized this is permanently life-altering here, and there are definitely sections of Alaska that were.
Mm-hmm.
And people did leave, especially some of those coastal areas. They left and came down here to the lower 48.
But the 7.0 And that's really what they design when we talk about the great shakeout here in Oregon. When we do that, that's really what we're trying to prep for. That's reasonable. You can make it through those things, right?
And that's what I said to begin with. They're talking about, you know, when they're building things to standards, the dams, all of these other things, they're building it to the most reasonably expected. They are not building them to withstand the absolute catastrophic, because being perfectly honest, I don't know that that could be done.
Or certainly at nothing affordable, right? So just remember, when people are talking about the big one, there's two levels of big ones. And there's the one, there's the one that's reasonably prepared for, and then there's the other one that, well, should you survive it, then maybe plan to relocate. Everyone, there'd be a mass migration east, right?
Here's the thing. You survive it, and with the road system failure that's going to happen one way or the other, even if you wanted to leave and migrate out, you're not going to get the chance to do that for a very long time.
All right. Fair enough. Well, see, you wanted to weigh in on that. You didn't have time on Friday. And so thanks for cheering me up this morning, Greg. It really was good.
Well, here's the thing. Probably, because, you know, these things, you can actually go back and find their pattern in the geologic record. That's the good news.
Oh, yeah, you go out in the coast and you can see the massive changes in elevation that some of the land out there had at that at the last time it happened.
Know, and I kind of mentioned this in a post letting people know we were talking about this. We found evidence of Cascadia events here triggering massive tsunamis over in Japan, just like Fukushima in 2011 did to us.
That's right.
And just like the Good Friday quake in 64 did to Crescent City.
All right, so what would Mr. Outdoors give us as I'm going to give you top three things that you would do to prepare for the super big one, if you could. If you could.
Okay. Be able to build a shelter without having to require, you know, necessarily what running down to your local hardware store and getting all the wood and everything. There are videos out there all over the place about how to build long-term survival shelters just with what you find on the ground and in the woods. And you need to start watching those, because you need to start thinking about, what am I going to have? Now, granted, some of us are also going to have debris. But the other part of this is, you know, depending on when this happens and how long it lasts to get, you know, even electricity and other things restored here, you may have to live just as the mountain man and the Indians did. You may be down in the valley for the winter, and then in the summer, to get out of the heat of the valley, you may need to move up into the mountains and find cooler, shadier areas on north slopes and start all over again, building a shelter up there, and then move accordingly, because it's going to be really hard to say how long the aftermath and the recovery of this is going to take, but my estimate would be probably at least 18 months to 2 years to fully get the road system restored here, and then to really be able to rebuild the electrical grid. No idea.
Yeah, it would be turned into 1810 very quickly here in Southern Oregon. Really.
The other critical thing is definitely be able to purify water, have water purification systems, because
and by the way, multiple ways, multiple water purifications. Keep some in your vehicle, keep some in your home, keep some in a shed. In other words, so that way if one area gets destroyed, you still have a way. You know, it's still a way to get to some of that.
And
right?
Be able to live off the land, because, you know, people who can hunt and fish and know how to gather what's edible, definitely going to have a major leg up on those who can't.
They're going to be your buddy for sure. And, of course, if you have cats and dogs. Okay, I don't even want to go there.
But on the other hand,
I'll be looking at Charlie, looking at little Charlie, my kitten, going, oh, Charlie, plump thighs. Just kidding. But, all right.
Yeah.
Hey, Greg, we'll talk more on Friday, all right? Appreciate the quick one. But, yeah, the 9.0 is not a necessarily a that's a lot tougher, a lot higher bar to work than the others, okay? You be well, okay?
Again, learn from what happened. happened in Alaska in 64. Because, again, what I'm telling you is not this apocalyptic fairy tale. It already happened once before. And Weather Channel used to have a series called It's Happened Before, It'll Happen Again. This is definitely one of those. You know, it's just nobody really wants to think about it. Nobody wants to act like it's coming. I was having this discussion once with a major official here in our area who would be in charge of having to direct a number of search and rescue efforts and other things. Mm-hmm. And when I really started laying out the full worst case scenario, their eyes bulged right out of their head. They went white as a sheet and they said, I don't want to hear anymore. I just don't.
Yeah, you can't. Well, you know, though, look at the bright side, though. Those officials are not going to be able to tax you much at that point. You know, they don't even have, you know, the bank won't be open. They're not going to be able to.
The catastrophic change won't just be, you know, across the landscape and to, you know, our way of living. It's going to be in all kinds of things. The societal impact, what that winds up doing, you know.
Yeah, well, sustainable development and climate-friendly, equitable community, that ends up going out the window at that point. All right.
Honestly, all of that kind of stuff that a lot of people hold dear, when a thing like this happens, you'll find out just how much that really matters to life.
All right.
Not at all.
All right, Greg. Hey, appreciate the take on it. We'll talk on Friday on the Outdoor Report, okay? You be well.
You got it.
Greg Roberts, once again, Rogue Weather. He wanted to do a little bit on the, you know, what would really happen in that 9.0, okay? It's 7:34 at KMED. Diana Anderson, I'll get her on the phone briefly. She has an event going on tonight she wants you to attend, and she's been doing a great work out there on all that sustainable development stuff that the left is trying to foist upon you.
Imagine a Jackson County where every family feels safe, no resident is homeless, and all businesses succeed. Randy Sparacino will keep our community safe by strengthening lawn.
You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED. Now Bill wants to hear from you. 541-770-5633. That's 770-KMED.
It's kind of funny. I was, you know, after talking with Greg about what a 9.0 might really be like there. And I just got my Jackson County property tax statement that said that, hey, you get to pay another $150 a year or whatever it is, like that $43. You know, chances are, if the big one hits today, I probably won't worry about paying the bill. So there, Jackson County, there you go. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Take the property? Go ahead, take the property, please. No. Let me talk with Diana Anderson. Hello, Diana. How are you doing this morning? Always good to hear from you. What's up?
Fine. Thank you for having me on this morning.
Yeah. Now, you have an event going on tonight. You have been doing all sorts of exposures. Name of your book again for people who have not heard of that book. And I think it had Who Made Our Schools? I do have it someplace, but just give it to me because it's yours. Okay. Go ahead.
Who Made American Schools Marxist Training Centers? And it was more like a prelude to the Great Reset, because by the end of the book, I discussed the village, mm-hmm. villages that are coming up, and how all neighborhood unit planning kind of started.
Which sounds suspiciously like the climate-friendly, equitable community baloney that the governor and others have are trying to force down the gullet of Southern Oregon. Sounds suspiciously like that.
Yeah. Well, each time I do a presentation, I like to introduce new material because this whole agenda is so expansive. I mean, it's like a huge spider's web.
All right. Well, what are you doing tonight, and where is it going to be going where people can get educated on this? You've been very good on these, okay? Where is it going to be?
A lot of people are not quite sure exactly what 21 or Agenda 2030 is about, so we're going to cover that. Mm-hmm. And any other national or even local associations or agencies that are pushing this. So I want to concentrate on those direct contributors, more or less.
Could you give me an example of some of the players pushing this?
Well, the American Planning Association.
Yep.
They belong
Check.
To the EPA, the Rogue Valley Council of Governments, Department of Land Conservation Development, mm-hmm. The C40 Cities Leadership Group. All these are connected, too. They network. And so I wanted to make, show people that whatever they're watching on TV, they're looking at the national. They're looking at what's happening in Washington, D.C. mostly.
And quite often ignoring what is happening in the backyard here. So where is your event going to be going on? Where's your presentation on this? Okay.
It's going to be at Center Point Library again, and it starts at 6 o'clock tonight.
Right. About how long should people that want to get educated on these issues dedicate to it? An hour or two?
Well, what? About an hour or two. Mm-hmm. I like to give some time for people to ask questions or to give me input, too. So I want to cover specifically those 29 strategies and the 85 actions that the task force is working on right now. In fact, on the 9th, they had a meeting, and it was supposed to be at Rogue X. On the night before that, on the 8th, at the Jackson County Republican Party, I made an announcement that the task force was going to be meeting there and to, you know, really plead with people to come. And so a couple people came. I showed up, and I went to the front desk, and they told me what room it was in, and it was locked, and no one was there.
What happened?
So, they had moved their agenda over to Rogue Valley Transportation District office on 8th Street. And they didn't even tell the girls at the front desk at Rogue X that they would be changing their venue.
Do you think there was, are they attempting, in your opinion, to keep this stuff hidden and to keep as few people from meeting as possible?
Definitely. Because on Saturday, the secretary at Rogue Valley, or at JCRP, was generous enough to put a picture of the meeting at Rogue X. And she did that on a Saturday, and she put it on the Jackson County Republican Party website for us so people could see it. And then by Wednesday afternoon at 3 o'clock, it's not happening.
Yeah, that is, it's an interesting coincidence, all right? So once again, tonight, 6 o'clock, Central Point Library is where this is going to be going on. And any cost to attend, Diana?
No cost. I give a lot of handouts for people. In fact, I got so many leftover handouts, I hope I can give them all away tonight so people can share them. In November, I'll be doing another one, and it'll be on Zoom.
All right. We'll talk more about that, and we'll get you on to discuss it. You know, one of the concerns I've had, and I know, I don't know if you get into the geoengineering conspiracies at all, do you?
I saw a lot of flyovers the other day.
Okay, well, here's my issue. If you're going to, one of the issues I've had with people wanting me to focus on geoengineering is that, first off, you know, my scientists can go beat up your scientists kind of thing, and you have these kind of arguments. Talk to me about geoengineering once you end up rolling back climate-friendly, equitable community, once you end up throwing out the people promoting 2030, Agenda 2030, once you can stop a road diet going through downtown Medford or Ashland or Central Point or wherever, then you can talk to me about what I do about the spraying, if that's kind of stuff going on. You see what I'm getting at here? You know, almost like I swear that the chemtrail agenda is designed to drain away any potential energy from doing something that your local cities are doing right now. Okay? That's what I'm getting at.
You have to be on the ground.
Yeah.
Balintwasone, who wrote America's 30 Years War, he was raised in a Soviet bloc country in Hungary. And he came over here. He's a professor and a concert pianist, actually. And I talked to him years ago. I asked him, how do you fight Vospitani, which is this, you know, relationship between schools and the community? And he said, you need to fight it at the local level. You can't march to Washington, D.C. or up to your state capitol.
Exactly. Point well taken. So tonight, 6 o'clock at the Central Point Library for Diana Anderson's next presentation. We'll talk with you soon, Diana. You take care.
Okay. All right? Thank you so much.
All right. That's tonight. All right. 7:43. We have the Mayor of Phoenix. Mayor Phoenix is in studio. We're going to talk with him here in a couple of minutes and catch up on some of the attacks and intrusions going on there that they're hoping to roll back.
News brought to you by Millett Construction, specializing in foundation repair and replacement. Get on solid ground. Visit MillettConstruction.com.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. Negasi Zuberi has been found guilty on kidnapping, sex crimes.
106.7 KMED.
Terry Baker is the mayor of Phoenix. Terry, great to have you in here. And we want to talk a little bit about the politics happening in your neck of the woods here. In this upcoming election, we're already, I imagine some people already have their ballots. Have you received your ballot yet?
As of the weekend, we had not received our ballot.
But I haven't received mine.
Since it didn't come yesterday, I'm thinking it'll be here today.
Yeah, probably today.
Yep.
Which means the voting is starting. But what is happening with the interesting, I know that the left is, of course, very hot and very active in this particular election cycle. I'm kind of wondering, how is it affecting the city of Phoenix? I already know what's happened to talent, you know, over their efforts. They've been very effective, I think.
Right, right. Well, it's funny. When I was first sworn in as a city councilor, I was taken aside. This was back in 2017. Mm-hmm. I was taken aside by a higher up in the JCRP, and he says, hey, you got to realize you're up against a blue wave. They're trying to take over Medford. I said, what's that got to do with Phoenix? Mm-hmm. He says, well, they came up from the south. They took over Ashland, and now they've taken talent. And the only thing between talent and Medford is Phoenix, and they're going to be coming after you guys. That was in 2017.
Yeah, 7 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, time went by, and I eventually figured out, actually no eventual about it, I figured out what they were talking about. And we have a group of people in town, I'd say that averages about 40 to 50 people that are the most active, create the most noise, if you will, in our city council meetings and, you know, protesting us and so forth. Well, of course, I ran for mayor in 2020.
And you're running for re-election, of course.
I'm running for re-election
now. And you've gotten very wealthy, of course, from being a mayor.
Oh, yeah, volunteer job.
Yeah, okay.
Like, you know, in all fairness, I only put in about 30 hours a week as the mayor rebuilding the city, so volunteer doesn't seem too bad. That's a joke. I'm being sarcastic.
Okay. Yeah, I got it.
But, you know, it's a labor of love. You know, it's my hometown. When I was born, my parents took me to an apartment up on Elm Street, and that's where my father went to school. I went to school. My son went to school. It's in the fiber of who I am. The city is in the fiber of who I am.
So where are the attacks coming from, though, in where there is this difference of opinion in the city of Talent? There's a number of candidates. I don't want to get involved
I don't want to get into the details of that either, but I will say this, and I'm not going to put Talent down here. I'm just going to say they have a completely different ideology. Their ideology seems to be after the fire that they would recreate town into what they wished it had been originally. Our ideology in Phoenix, myself and Eric Swanson, council, city staff, has been to rebuild the town we had before and hopefully make it into something nicer. In other words, if you had a 55 Bel Air that had blackberries going over the top of it and was rusted out and stuff,
you were still going to bring back your 55 Bel Air.
We're going to bring it back to be nice
as
and shiny.
As much as possible.
They might have tried to make it a Ford Cougar, right? That's the difference. So with that in mind, you know, we went very methodically about it. First, we're going to bring our residents home. We worked with the state. We worked with the feds. We worked with the county to process the permitting process faster, beefed up our permitting process, so did the county. And as it sits right now, we're at 99% people living in their homes, having dinner in their kitchen tables. And not the mobile homes, because that's a slower supply chain, but they're on the way. They're still coming steady. We did a lot of things that have been very successful. And the funny thing is right after the fire, I was sworn in, you know, January of 2021, which is when the rebuild began. Well, last time, this is my third time to run for mayor. The second time when I ran for reelection 2 years ago, most of the town was still flat, or at least a lot of it was. We're still just under that rebuild process. And funny thing was, nobody wanted to be the mayor back then. In fact, we had trouble finding people to run for city council. And the point I'm getting to is it's kind of like that 55 Bel Air that has the weeds growing up through it. Nobody wants it when it's sitting in the blackberries. But now that we've come back and we've built this city into a beautiful, shining example of what a community can do when it comes together, I got a guy running against me for mayor, and we have three city councilors running as a slate. The four of them are running as a slate. And I would like to say that, you know, they're liberal, whatever. These people are so far to the left, if they go any farther, they will fall off the planet. And so what we're seeing here is a complete different ideology.
Yeah, what is the difference of opinion here on this, on the in the ideologies of this? Because I heard rumor that there was even complaints that you had too many big businesses that were rebuilding in Phoenix.
We just had a candidate debate night forum, like a meet the candidate thing, last Thursday. And they are against any big business coming in. They're like, we have a Starbucks coming in, and it's not in the middle of town, but they're really upset about it. We have a Dollar General coming in at the north end of town, and this group of potential leaders is 100% against that. In fact, the guy running, my opponent, I'm not going to say his name, but my opponent running for mayor pulled up up in Joseph, Washington. They made a ban on big businesses in their town. He says, I've got that. I know how to go about it. They want to ban any large businesses like Dollar General or Starbucks, for example. We've got a Starbucks coming. And I'm not a big Starbucks fan, but want to build private property.
I'm not either. But you know, it's kind of funny that they're doing this. In other words, taking it, it's kind of an elitist way of looking at the world, in my view, that people don't. You know, let's be honest. I mean, I can't exactly say that I love the idea of Dollar Generals, but Dollar Generals exist because there are a lot of people that are using these stores in order to make their budgets. That's the reality of where we find ourselves.
I am with you. I'm not a big Dollar General guy myself. However, Dollar General, who is developing it privately, bought the property from a private property owner, and I am all about private property owners' rights. You know, they have rights. Just like I have a house, I don't want somebody to come in and tell me how I have to do my kitchen. Oh, wait, I do like gas stoves. Mm-hmm. Back on a, and the other thing is these people, we gotta have low-income housing. Well, I got news. We have two low-income housings going up right now, a third one in the works out on Grove Road. Here's the irony. Is right across.
Yeah, that cracks me up, though, because they seem to be ultimately, they're contradictory. Contradictory statements. We want low income housing, but then we don't want any of the businesses that help low income people.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
The Dollar General is going in right across the road from two of the low income housing projects. Those people need those affordable places to shop because they can't necessarily afford to go into Medford, and they can't. You can't. Artisan shops are more expensive.
Well, maybe what they they're looking for here is that they want a Whole Foods to come here. So your $100 bag of groceries ends up being $250. You know?
Exactly.
I don't know.
Well, you can always go to the government for more money, right?
Oh, so, that could be universal basic
pockets,
income.
Yeah.
All right, I know we're being really sarcastic.
I know,
this,
I'm terrible. It's early, it's Monday, but let's rock, you know.
So this is the kind of stuff going on in Phoenix right now, huh?
That's what they're pushing for. And, of course, the campaign, my opponent contacted me early in the campaign and wanted to meet me for coffee. And with all due respect, I told him I didn't see where there could be any possible good that would come out of that conversation, so I respectfully declined. I did mention in that conversation, I said, you know, obviously, we see things different on the scale of ideology, but I will pledge you this, that I will keep my campaign clean. I'm not going to go in the gutter. I'm not going to get dirty. The people of Phoenix deserve better. I've given them that for the last 4 years, 3.5 years. I'm going to keep my side clean. Well, he never reciprocated that comment, which I just thought, well, it's early in the morning. Maybe it's, you know. But no, he's actually, it's gone.
No, you have to understand, though, that the ideology you're fighting is by any means necessary.
By any means necessary. And so we have, these people are, for example, there was a business in town where one of our counselors put up their sign. And this business has like 6 or 8 tenants that rents office space. And our counselor had to take their sign down because my opponent's people, if you will, scared them so bad they were afraid if they left the sign up that their businesses would suffer. I've heard twice over the weekend from different people who were out passing out literature or whatever, knocking on doors, who were approached by my opponent or one of his minions who just basically cornered them, got in their face about it. And so, and by the way, one of those, I guess, went to somebody that was out for us, and they said, oh, by the way, I didn't know you made $56,000 a year being the mayor.
What?
And I about fell out of the chair. I was like,
it'd be nice if you did.
Now, in 100% disclosure, I get a $100 a month stipend to help pay for my gas and it doesn't quite pay for the gas, but it, you know, helps. So basically, if you say I'm making $56,000 a year, you're off by almost $55,000, which is a big discrepancy. You know, the deal is that, you know, we've been doing our best to rebuild this town, and it's just like the car you pull out of the weeds. Now it's all shiny and beautiful, and somebody wants to take it.
Now they want to run it.
Now they want to run it.
They didn't want to help rebuild it.
No, but, they didn't want to get their hands dirty in the countless hours. You know, rebuilding took a lot of time and a lot of effort, you know, and I've spent a lot of time. I'm on the RV COG, Rogue Valley Council of Governments. I'm also on RV MPO. I have both of those meetings this week, each of which they average about 2 hours, a little bit less. Doing that every month, you know, it just takes so much of your time.
You know, I'm kind of curious, not to get off in the weeds on this, so to speak, but I'm kind of curious, do you find with the RV MPO and the RV COG that they kind of get in the way more than they help? Or because remember, this is the sustainable development pushing type of agendas. Because Diana Anderson was just talking about that a few minutes ago.
And I can understand that that thought process. I think I've seen it do some really good stuff too, though. I mean, sometimes I get frustrated because it seems like we chase around the same subject a very long time. However, there's some really good stuff that comes out of it as well. For instance, the smart fire cameras that have gone up. The first one went up in Cave Junction, and we've got the next one coming up for Phoenix. Mm-hmm. These cameras, actually, they scan like a regular camera, but when they see a fire, they can diagnose if it's a fire or not, what it is, and then it automatically notifies somebody at the fire service that it's there, and the fire service guy can check it out and see if there's something real. So that is good.
Well, maybe your opponents, though, don't want those fire cameras because, remember, all fire just restores the forest. And if we're burning the city again, we're just... I'm just kidding. I don't even want to go there.
I get it. But,
okay.
Gosh,
all
yes.
right.
So it's really gotten to be, unfortunately, a really nasty campaign. I'm still keeping my head up. I'm not going to go around bashing my opponents with things that aren't necessarily honest, right? I don't
okay.
want to get too deep into that.
Well, let's just be very clear, though, that you are not paid $56,000
no,
a year.
No, heavens no. Gosh.
But if they were paying you, they'd probably have to pay you more than $56,000 to get some person to take the job.
If they were paying me $56,000 a year, yeah, it wouldn't be enough.
Yeah.
But, you know, for me, labor of love. It's my hometown. It's the fabric of who I am. And I'll take second seat to nobody when it comes to desire to serving the city of Phoenix with everything you got, all my heart and all my soul. I'm second to none. I may not be the best, but I'm definitely putting out the most effort.
All right, very good. Terry, good seeing you. Terry
good
Baker, Mayor of Phoenix. And I didn't realize that this kind of battle was going on there.
Oh, my gosh. But, you know, it's not just in Phoenix. It's happening everywhere, whether we see it or not. It's always going on. I don't know what it is about, the other ideology that is so mean. Just mean. Why can't we just run on our record and our performance? If we want to go on record and performance... Myself and my count, I have two city councilors running for re-election. Please elect them. We need to keep the team together. We work as a team. One of their main complaints, we don't have enough arguments in our city council meetings. Yeah, think about that. The word they used was consternation. We don't argue enough in our city council meetings. And I was like, that's because we work as a team. We treat each other with respect. We come up with ideas and we build on those. We build on success. Mm. So, you know, I just hope that they all get bit. And that's Krista Peterson and Karen Schrader. Those are counselors running for re-election. And it's very clear to me that the people running against us, my opponent has had some government experience, but all three of the other city counselors, zero.
All right. All right, Terry. Yeah, point well taken. We appreciate you coming in, as always, and best of luck in the couple of weeks, okay?
Thank you, Bill.
All right. You be well.
Have a great
Terry
day.
Baker. Yeah, Mayor of Phoenix. It is 8 o'clock, KMED, KMED, HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass.
Ben Franklin once said, when the well is dry, we know...
Mark writes me this morning, who is he calls himself a third-generation Oregonian. I love this email. He says, Bill, fastest way to spot a Californian transplant. They look bewildered when you say I-5. When they are in a group, they discuss the interstate. They call it the 5. Okay. Other clues are Oregon, Rouge River, Willamette River. They don't know what you're talking about when you discuss the banana police, all right? A mass of people buying property after each massive earthquake in California. They stay in the left lane regardless when not passing anyone. When traveling with a fresh transplant, I tell them to hurry and get out a pen and paper when approaching a drawbridge sign. A state law, I inform them. And then there is the Indian story of Falling Rock and the continuing saga of looking for him. Mark, you crack me up. I appreciate that. The email, Bill at BillMyersShow.com. All right. I'll tell you what, let's catch up on Town Hall News in just a moment. We have the Kim Komando digital update also on the way, and Dr. Powers, where past meets present. Good conversation. And Commissioner John West will join me from Josephine County after the 8:30 news.
The People's Commissioner. Hi, this is...